On the menu this Thanksgiving Day, we've got a bit of holiday retail, some creative ways to fill the travel void, and working from home with pets. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday, November 26th. Good to have you with us for the Thanksgiving holiday. We are a business show, so yes, we're going to start with what today means for a big chunk of the economy, retail, because the deals extravaganza we still call Black Friday has actually already begun. The pandemic has a lot of us rethinking our shopping, because do we really want to live in a world where only the big national chains survive? A survey from Ad Taxi found that 75% of shoppers plan to make an effort to shop local this holiday season. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
Usually, this shopping weekend at Terra Toys in Austin, Texas, is one big celebration.
When they walk in, they think that they've joined like some mosh pit of toy shoppers.
Sylvia Edwards is the general manager.
You know, there's children running up and down everywhere and loud music and, you know, noises from different toys being played with. It's just a cacophony of a magic madness. And so it'll never get like that this year.
And not just because of social distancing. Terra Toys has divided its shopping hours. Grown-ups only, 10 to 4. All ages welcome, 4 to 6. The store is also offering night owl tours, private appointments for shoppers after closing.
You get a whole hour in the toy store, and then a little personal salesperson that walks you through the store and shows you our toy workshop where we still cut wood and make toys.
These are the kinds of personal touches that could help small retailers cut through all the noise coming from big box stores. Alexis DeSalva-Kaler at Mintel says traditionally, a third of shoppers do most of their buying this weekend. And the message from retailers, she says, is that they hope to see even bigger numbers this year.
Basically, start thinking about your holiday shopping now, because it's just only going to be more of a challenge to get what people want on time.
The goal this season? Make every day an occasion to shop. Frank Reese, who owns Acapella Books in Atlanta, is doing that with extra virtual book clubs and author events.
A lot of our business in normal times is not in this little store. What a lot of our business is off-site events.
And he's doing the free delivery thing by hand because, you know, Amazon sells books too. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
I don't know about you, but one thing I am thankful for today is a working internet connection, because I am working from home still, as millions of others have been for the last 8 months or so. And even if you have today off, with public health experts telling us to hunker down with just the members of our households, today may kind of feel like Thanksgiving at work. Our workplace culture reporter Megan McCarty-Carino has been checking in with folks since that very first week they were sent home with their laptops back in March. She has this update.
Erin McDermott has been COVID remote longer than almost anyone. When I first spoke to her in mid-March, the marketing agency where she works in Seattle had just closed its office.
We're on day 8 of working from home. I don't have anything too negative to say. We'll see how long it lasts.
She lived in a house with three other 20-something women. They set up makeshift desks in hallways and laundry rooms and competed for bandwidth on their overloaded Wi-Fi. Then, over the summer, she moved, not out of the city like so many others, but to a bigger house with better Wi-Fi and the same roommates.
They're like my best friends, and I love them, but it's a lot of together time.
In Worcester, Massachusetts, Josh and Jessica Witt have been dealing with a more disruptive coworker.
I want you to go potty.
Okay, you know how to go. Go ahead.
I have to go poop.
Okay,
I'll
go back in a few minutes.
3-year-old Luella is still interrupting work video calls, but now she's spending half the day at daycare. That allowed Jessica to return to work in person, teaching biology at Assumption University. Josh has a more flexible schedule with his biotech firm, so he handles stuff at home. They've also added some new family members.
We adopted a dog because Josh convinced me that...
And 12 chickens.
12 chickens because Josh convinced me that this would be the time.
In Los Angeles, Sonia Kang's 4 school-age kids have been at home for 8 months.
Thankfully, we're not sick of each other. I'm looking at my daughter and she's laughing like, please, yes, we are.
Early on, Kang's clothing business was disrupted by shutdowns and while she supervised math tests. But now that her kids have gotten the hang of distance learning, she's been able to get back to work, pivoting her business to mask making.
I just feel like we're grooving.
Her family will be holding Thanksgiving like they do everything else now over video chat. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Markets were closed for Thanksgiving, but we'll have a check on the real economy when we do the numbers. Back in the spring, I met Terrence Dixon. He owns a restaurant here in Baltimore called Terra Cafe. They serve comfort food like jerk chicken, mac and cheese, and fried plantains. There's a patio out back he calls the Jerk Garden. When Congress first created the Paycheck Protection Program to help small businesses keep workers on the payroll during the pandemic, Dixon was initially denied. He did eventually receive a small loan through the program, but now he's working with other Black-owned businesses like his to make sure they don't lose out on funding in the future. I wanted to check back and see how he's doing. Terrence, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon.
I know you've been working with an organization called World Central Kitchen to distribute meals to people in need. How does that partnership work?
I'm going to tell you what, it was a godsend. When they said that they needed us to help share meals in Baltimore City with people that might be hungry or might need a meal, I was in. And then they told me they're going to pay me too. I was blown away. You know, originally our staff before COVID, we were about 24 people. When COVID came, I had to furlough 4 people because of health reason and age. But with the World Central Kitchen, I've been able to keep all my staff. You know, the loaf has gotten smaller. The loaf has gotten smaller. It's a real skinny sandwich. But everybody's eating. Not 40 hours. Now you're getting 15, 20 hours, sometimes 25. But World Kitchen has definitely helped us fill in the blanks and at least keeps the doors open.
So what's on the menu for Thanksgiving this year?
Well, what's going to happen is this. We're going to do something on Saturday. We open up the Jerk Garden. We have a little jerk chicken. We'll have a little sauteed veggies. We'll have a little rice. We'll have a little music. And we'll invite the community just to stop by and grab a meal. It's enough space that if they want to sit down and social distance and have their meal, they're more than welcome to, because a lot of people couldn't visit anywhere. And that's what we're trying to do.
You've mentored a lot of other Black entrepreneurs over the years, some of them right on your block there on St. Paul Street here in Baltimore. How are they doing? What are you hearing from some of the folks you've worked with?
It's gotten to the point now that we've actually launched the Terra Loft Consulting, which is an incubator for micro Black business. You know, we're helping people with their COVID plans now and also prepare them, because we know that, guess what? The city, the state, the federal government is going to have to help these small businesses. So what we want to do is we want to make them in the right situation, that they have all of those things that might be needed for a grant. Or even if, like I've shared with a few businesses, guess what? We might have to try to get a little small, low interest loan. There are a few places in town that are being very kind and they have patient capital for small business. But one of the big things that you find in my community with Black business is to trust. You know, if you're in business and you're putting your money in a bank for the last 5 years, and it's almost like the world is coming to an end, and every time you turn on the news or the radio, you hear that there's a grant, but you never get it, you kind of stop trusting on that. It's an emotional roller coaster you don't want to ride.
Well, and along those lines, there has been a huge amount of interest in Black-owned businesses recently since the police killing of George Floyd and the national reckoning, really, about systemic racism. Are you seeing real action come out of that?
You know what? That's the challenge. I'm so happy you used that word. No, we haven't seen any action. And that's one of the key things that I'm hoping I can, you know, bring some light on it and find some help for folks. Because, You know, we're going to have to change. We're going to have to change the way that we kept score before. It doesn't work. It doesn't work right now. So if people are actually going out and keeping their businesses open, keeping the community encouraged, we got to make sure that they get some funding. We got to make sure that they stay open, because if not, 6 months, 9 months from now, businesses are going to be closed. Or if some are open, they might be so heavy in debt, they're going to close. So, I mean, now is action time.
Can you say more about what you mean by we've got to change the way we keep score?
Well, one of the things is this, is that when all this happened and I applied for the PPP.
Right, the Paycheck Protection Program for small businesses.
Exactly. I did all the right things, you know, business bank account, proper license, insurance, all of those things that they needed. But the only problem was I didn't have a relationship with the bank. And so at that point, guess what? I didn't qualify. They didn't care that I employed 24 people. They didn't care that the cafe was open for 11 years and was a real rock for the community itself here. So that's what I'm talking about, changing the narratives. They have to look at the people. That if you don't save this business, guess what happens? Now the city, now the state, and now the federal government is responsible for 20 families. See, I want to do my job. I want to provide jobs for my community. But guess what? I need help.
Terrence Dixon is the owner of Terra Cafe in Baltimore and also Terra Loft Consulting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Judging from the traffic at airports, plenty of folks are ignoring public health recommendations to avoid travel this holiday week. More than a million people passed through TSA checkpoints yesterday, a record high since early March, but still less than half the traffic on the same weekday last year. And as the overall slump in air travel drags on, the Air Transport Action Group is warning close to 5 million aviation jobs worldwide could be at risk. But if jumbo jets are sitting idle, the travel industry isn't. The BBC's Claire Williamson reports on the rise of so-called trips to nowhere.
Welcome on board.
To millions of frequent flyers stuck at home, those words are a distant memory. International travel has pretty much ground to a halt this year because of the pandemic, but some Asian airlines have found a way to keep their jumbo jets running. Japan's ANA was the first to offer a scenic flight on its Tokyo to Hawaii route, complete with staff wearing Hawaiian shirts and serving cocktails. ANA's communications chief, Hiro Miyagawa, said that the idea actually came from their customers.
It was incredibly popular. You know, the plane was a 520-seater. We only sold like 300 seats because, you know, we wanted to be precautious about it. But actually, the people who wanted to fly, there was like 150 times more than the number of seats that we sold. 150 times.
ANA is planning another four flights between now and the new year. Taiwan's EVA Air, Royal Brunei, and Australia's Qantas are also offering these sightseeing trips. And the demand for tickets speaks volumes about our urge to escape. But these flights that don't go anywhere are not cheap. Some tickets sold for between $600 and nearly $3,000 for business class. So are these flights just a gimmick, or will they actually make money for the world's embattled airlines?
I'm Joanna Bailey, and I'm the editor of aviation news website called Simple Flying. There is an element of revenue acquisition, of course. You know, airlines are desperate to find ways to make money. We've seen numerous airlines converting, you know, taking the seats out to fly cargo in these trying times. This is one of the ways that they can make a bit of revenue. But more than that, it's satisfying a need amongst flyers. It's giving people the opportunity to get off the ground without actually risking all the nuances of travelling to a foreign country.
There's no question it's been a gruelling few months. Many travellers have saved enough money during the lockdown that they're ready to splash out. But not everyone is on board with the idea.
I was dismayed to learn about the flights to nowhere phenomenon because I think they're an environmental disaster.
Ben Iaquinto is a tourism geographer at the University of Hong Kong.
You know, what makes tourism sustainable, I guess, economically and socially, is that when you fly to a different destination, you have all these services in a different destination. And what I think will end up happening is that they'll normalize flights even more than they've already been normalized and just make flying even more part of our everyday lives when we really should be flying less.
Unfortunately for environmental activists, it's not just the airlines that are organizing trips to nowhere. That's the sound of a luxury cruise ship leaving harbour. A sound not heard since March this year. But from this month, Hong Kong's Genting Dream Cruises will start taking passengers again. But will it be a difficult sell given the mass infection rates that we saw on cruise ships at the very beginning of the pandemic?
The outbreak has now led the State Department to issue a rare warning urging every American against cruise ship travel, and it comes as the Grand Princess.
For this sector that was so badly hit by the epidemic, it's all about regaining trust. But the travel companies would much rather sell us trips to somewhere. In London, I'm the BBC's Claire Williamson for Marketplace.
If you're looking for somewhere to go tomorrow, figuratively that is, head over to the Marketplace Morning Report for some economic context to get your day started. Coming up.
She definitely runs the household here.
Yes, cats will do that. But first, let's do the numbers. Markets in the U.S. are closed today to mark the Thanksgiving holiday. So how about some numbers from the real economy? We talked about air travel earlier in the show. Compared to last year, about 10% fewer Americans plan to travel for the holiday, according to a survey from AAA. Only about half as many folks said they plan to fly for this year's holiday. The vast majority will still drive somewhere this Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, AAA says a gallon of regular gas will cost you just about $2.12 on average. That's about 4 cents a gallon cheaper than a month ago and almost 50 cents cheaper than it was a year ago. It's an anxious Thanksgiving for a lot of Walt Disney Company employees. An additional 32,000 of them will face layoffs next year. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. I don't have to tell you this pandemic has been really hard for seniors and the people who love them. Older Americans are more vulnerable to the coronavirus and to the isolation so many are facing as a result. And seniors on limited incomes face financial challenges as well, especially in communities of color that have been hit hardest by the disease. Leslie McClurg from KQED in San Francisco reports.
When Sukari Addison needs to clear her mind, she sits in the garden of a huge Episcopal church called Grace Cathedral. She says the peaceful environment helps her accept our new reality.
We're in a big change now. But I've been through changes before, a lot of them as African American.
And during this difficult time, she's actually managed to save money. Addison can cover her expenses, which are about $1,000 a month, in one of the most expensive cities in the world, with her Social Security check. She no longer shops or eats out. She's frugal at the supermarket.
I know everything and every price. That's part of my elderness, I call it.
She lives in a simple room in a family-owned hotel in the heart of downtown. The manager has never raised her rent.
I've been there 26 years, and they never made me move.
Addison has congestive heart failure and high blood pressure, both of which are risk factors for COVID. But she says she's not living in fear.
Well, you get 85 years old, you know you got a foot on the banana peel.
So on a hot summer night in August, she says she didn't panic when she started feeling sick.
I just threw myself on the bed and there I stayed for 12 hours.
Within days, she tested positive for COVID and landed in the hospital with pneumonia. Exhaustion consumed her. She says the hardest part was the rule against visitors. But
the doctors and the nurses was just over and beyond. And I think that got me through a lot.
After 2 dire weeks, her physician sent her home. She says she was relieved when Medicare covered all of her hospital bills. Diane Evans also depends on Medicare to cover her doctor's bills.
I am not drowning in expenses.
The 74-year-old lives at a senior center in San Francisco. It's subsidized housing in one of the roughest neighborhoods in the city. Her expenses also total about $1,000 a month. She lives on Social Security. She pays $300 a month for a small room. The nonprofit Meals on Wheels delivers food. Evans prides herself on living simply.
The biggest expense is laundry.
She spends most days alone, yet she says she's not suffering more than usual right now.
If adverse situations beat you down, there wouldn't be an African-American in this country. You survive. You do what you have to do to survive.
She stays connected by listening to the news on the radio or streaming Hulu Live. She flips between MSNBC, Fox, and CNN. She's learning to use an iPad.
I save things on the news app in the cloud.
She smiles as she pulls out a purple cell phone.
I learn how to text.
She Zooms regularly with her daughter in Chicago, and she can't wait to get back to community organizing.
I miss it horribly. We were involved in everything. Everything.
She says she'd love to join the protests calling for racial equity. But until the pandemic ends, she's lying low.
I want to be alive at the end of this.
Her mother taught her a mantra she lives by.
And this too shall pass.
Now she's handing that wisdom down to her grandchildren. In San Francisco, I'm Leslie McClurg for Marketplace.
Megan reminded us earlier in the show that for some people, the whole work from home thing is getting old. But remember how earlier this spring, lots of people were talking about how happy their pets were to have people home with them all the time? That brings us to today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Heidi Moreno, and I'm an illustrator. On most days, you can find me sitting on my desk here in my little studio at home in Los Angeles, just drawing cats. I have a cat named Peanut, and she's kind of my muse, I like to say. She's kind of really inspired me in drawing cats with a little bit of attitude. She definitely runs the household here. If I choose to paint and I lay down my art, even if I just walk away for a second, she, and if I come back, she's on my art, even if it's wet. And from there, like, she'll step on something. And then I end up having a cleanup before I get started on work. When I wrap up my orders, I usually lay them down on the floor and they have all the shipping labels and everything. And Peanut usually walks over and just sits on them. She wants to go outside. She usually just is making a lot of noise. And even now that my husband is here sometimes working, she's just meowing as loud as she can. And now all his coworkers know her because she's so loud. It's just kind of funny to have her around, but also really nice because sometimes you have your days where you're like, oh, okay, I didn't land that job with that company. So you do get down. And so having her around is also really nice, like comforting. She makes sure that there's a little bit of her touch on every order with her hair. So this is where she pitches in with shipping and handling.
Heidi Moreno has a new illustrated book out all about working from home with her cat/coworker, Peanut. You can see some of the artwork from the book at marketplace.org. And this final note on the way out, relevant for a day all about thankfulness. Practicing gratitude has been kind of trendy the past several years, with all sorts of research showing the benefits to our mental and physical health. According to Vox, feeling thankful for what we have also makes us more generous. In 2017, neuroscientist Christina Carnes at the University of Oregon tracked people's brain activity as they watched a computer move real money either into their own account or to a food bank. Those who Carnes had identified as more grateful had a stronger response in the reward regions of the brain when the money went to charity. Something to think about during this giving season. We've got to go. Amir Bibawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Amy Scott. Have a good Thanksgiving. We'll be back tomorrow. This is APM.